Good afternoon and welcome.
It's
midday. I'm
Archive
Tom Hall.
Edition of
Thanks
midday.
For being with us.
I'm Tom Hall.
And good afternoon. We are having some technical difficulties today here. The computer is acting up on us. It's midday. It's Monday. And I apologize for the introduction to today's program. But in fact, we are going to be talking about MONSEE, the Mayor's Office of Neighborhood Safety and Engagement. And a little bit later, another installment in our series of Midday in the Neighborhood. Last week, for the eighth consecutive year, Baltimore reached the grim milestone of more than 300 homicides in the year. There are those who insist on telling the story of our city by focusing on the number of murders, but to tell it only through the lens of crime is, of course, to tell our city's story incompletely. And it does a disservice to those who help make Baltimore's story a positive one. But the murder rate is definitely something to which political and law enforcement leaders should be held accountable. Mayor Brandon Scott made promises about the rate at which violence in our city would be reduced that he has not been able to keep. 2 years ago, Scott promised a 15% annual reduction in the number of murders. That goal remains merely an aspiration. Now, it's not that the mayor hasn't thought about how to improve this situation. In July of last year, he released a 5-year comprehensive violence prevention plan. And at the heart of this plan is something called GVRS, or Group Violence Reduction Strategy, launched in partnership with the Baltimore Police Department, the state's attorney's office, and federal partners. A pilot program of GVRS has been in place for almost a year in the Western Police District. Has it been effective, and is it ready to be scaled up to other areas in the city? The plan is overseen by Shantae Jackson. She is the director of the Mayor's Office of Neighborhood Safety and Engagement, or MONSEE. And last June, a year after the plan was released, Director Jackson faced a frustrated Baltimore City Council who expressed impatience with the pace of improvement. As 2022 nears a close, we've invited Director Jackson to be with us today to explain what the Group Violence Reduction Strategy is and to assess its value so far and moving forward. Shantae Jackson joins us from her office on Zoom. Director Jackson, welcome.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
It's always good to have you, and I appreciate your time. Hope you had a good Thanksgiving. You have a really hard job. Being in charge of implementing a violence reduction plan in a city that's, you know, had many years now of increases in crime and difficulties stemming the tide. Tell us about this group violence reduction strategy. What's at the heart of it? And give us your assessment of how it's going. It's been part of the plan now for a while.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I did have a really good holiday. Thanksgiving happens to be my favorite because I get to eat for days. I'm hopeful that you had a good one as well.
I did. And eating was definitely something that happened, that's for sure.
Yes, yes. So the first thing that I would say with regard to my job is that I continue to be grateful and humbled to be able to deliver on the mayor's commitment. The first commitment ever that we've seen to a comprehensive violence prevention plan, one that is rooted in what Baltimore has said that it needed and not necessarily tied to an administration. So one that should be longstanding. With regard to the group violence reduction strategy itself, it's one that's rooted in a multi-pronged approach, one that looks to individuals who are group involved, and we'll talk about what group involved looks like in a minute, because it's very different than gang involved, and I think that there's some confusion across the city about that. Folks who are group involved and potentially group involved in violent groups, and it gives them an opportunity to make a decision, an opportunity to decide to walk away from that lifestyle and to take advantage of opportunities that they aren't necessarily afforded on a day-to-day basis around resources, around employment, around education, around housing, or not to take that opportunity and deal with very stiff consequences associated with a law enforcement approach, which is the second prong. The third, and I would say equally important prong of that is the community moral voice piece of the work. This is where the community violence intervention work intersects with the group violence reduction strategy. And it's one that employs credible messengers, whether that is Miss Darlene, whose son was murdered and whose children she's taking care of right now, or whether or not that's Ray Kelly or Marvin McKinstry, who's a pastor at a church, but has a very credible voice when it comes to individuals around taking advantage of those opportunities. And that multi-pronged approach has yielded us really good results so far this year.
Talk about the difference between the group designation as opposed to the gang designation. When you talk about group violence reduction strategy, what groups are you referring to?
Yeah, so as defined by David Kennedy, who came up with this strategy originally called Ceasefire out of Boston, a group is defined as a social network. And so a group could be a group of folks that you went to high school with. It could be a group of folks that live in your neighborhood. For all intents and purposes, as we think about groups in Baltimore City, it's your crew. Right? Some crews are violent, some crews are not. We all have social networks, right? The question just becomes whether or not those groups are involved in a violent activity or not. A gang has a law enforcement designation. Baltimore City has very few gangs. Gangs are typically extremely organized, and because of their makeup, They don't just occupy a single geography, where we're talking about groups that are specific to districts in our city because of the hyperlocality of how groups work. Gangs in Baltimore City are BGF. Gangs in Baltimore City are Bloods or Crips. We know that across the country, MS-13 is a gang. We are focusing on groups. And in the Western District alone, we know that we have almost 800 group members across over 50 groups.
And in those 50 groups, they are doing things that are similar, that are analogous to what gangs are doing. I mean, why is the distinction important?
The distinction is important because of the law enforcement approach that's taken with gangs. As I mentioned before, some groups are involved in gun violence and some groups are not. Because they are made up of social networks, the distinction is there. A gang is rooted in violent activity as a means to occupy a space or to conduct criminal or illicit activity. All groups don't do that.
And in July of last year, the mayor issued a report, July of this year, rather, saying what had happened over the previous year, from July of 2021, when the strategy was implemented, and you began this group violence reduction strategy as a pilot program in the Western Police District. So what does that mean? What did that pilot program entail? It's been going on now for almost a year and a half. What have you learned? Is it something that you think should be scaled up and brought to other areas of the city?
Yeah, just a couple of clarifying points there. So while the work associated with the group violence reduction strategy, or the pre-work, I should say, was going on prior to January of this year, that involved doing a problem analysis, understanding what the group dynamics were in the Western District, because the Western was selected because it was the deadliest district in our city for 5 years. We had 818 homicides and non-fatal shootings in the Western District alone. That's what led us to launching the pilot in the Western in January of this year, mid-January to be exact, in the Western District. And what that launch entailed was the identification of what we call community moral voice partners, right? And training them. So who are the folks that are most credible to have conversations with individuals who are group involved? And I want to be really clear in saying credibility looks different, right? I talked about Marvin McKinstry, who is on the cover of the Baltimore Sun today, who has been really impactful, along with Ray Kelly, who we know has been an advocate in Baltimore City for many years now, around being able to have conversations with folks in ways that resonate with them. So training them in how the group violence reduction strategy works, what it means to provide direct communication in ways that are empathetic, but also see the human side of the work, and making sure that folks are trained in order to deliver those messages. It also meant that we needed to train BPD in a different way around what their outreach team would need to do to effectively get folks to put down guns. What it meant to conduct what we call deconfliction, because we don't want to go out there offering services or opportunities to folks that we know are under active investigation, because it would be disingenuous to go out, do that, and then arrest them a couple of days later. It meant training BPD around how we conduct shooting reviews. It meant bringing in community service providers around coordination meetings so that we knew how to go out and how to safely address folks and to provide that service provision. What I will say to you, Tom, is that since we launched this in January, we really started to see what I consider some meaningful impacts by mid-March, where we were down about 18% in non-fatal shootings and homicides in the district. And as of last week, the Western is down almost 30%. So we go from being the deadliest district in our city, the most violent, to being the district that has the least amount of gun violence in it.
When it comes
to, I consider this proof of concept proven.
Yeah. When it comes to the BPD, for example, that piece of it, did you train just the officers in the Western District, or did you train the entire department? Have the folks in the Western District BPD been acting in a significantly different manner than the rest of the department?
That's a really good question. So I would say that command staff across the entire agency has been trained in the group violence reduction strategy, the Western District and those folks that were allocated, because you had to interview for these positions, right? We needed to make sure that we had outreach team members, enforcement team members with the right temperament. We want to make sure that we continue to constitutionally police, and at the same time, make sure that this law enforcement approach is one that is rooted in a balance of seeing a human for what they need to be seen as, while simultaneously making sure that we're enforcing laws. And so those folks that qualified for that position, those positions and were offered those positions, it's about 40 BPD officers in the Western District, did receive specialized training in addition to all of BPD's command staff. Now, I will say that as we prepare for scale up, we are starting to train all of the districts with regard to the execution of shooting reviews.
So you also staffed up over this past year or so, even more than a year. You have a chief of staff, you have a victim services associate director, you have a communications person, you've also got new roles for a reentry coordinator, a grants coordinator, a community partnership manager, et cetera. Do you have all of the staff in place that you think you are going to need moving forward? Is that process still in process, or is that part done, and are you ready to get down to work?
So I wouldn't say that we're ready to get down to work. I would say we've been working. Mm-hmm. Yes, I would say that the staff that we have currently meets the needs that we have. And at the same time, as we begin to really think through what scale up looks like across the city, there will likely be an additional need for few staff members to account for the project management that Monsey's responsible for GVRS, with regard to those other ancillary supports that we're providing around reentry and communications, around victim services. Our teams are very well staffed at this point.
The scope of the services that you're currently offering in the Western District, the Baltimore Sun, in that article you alluded to a minute ago, listed at about 75 people. Is that is that the right number? Is that in the ballpark at least?
So the pilot was meant to initially focus on 75 individuals. What I will say is that as of last week, direct communications is something that we targeted for 132 folks. We've delivered those notifications to all of those folks, with the exception of 19, which were still pending, right? Because we search relentlessly until we find folks. And of the services that we offered those to 81 people. We've had 71 people so far accept those services.
Let me ask you about the kinds of folks that you're working with. Let me ask you about a specific person. His name is Garrick Powell. He was accused in the murder of Dante Barksdale, who was sort of the face of Safe Streets for an awful lot of people. Safe Streets, of course, the violence interruption program. This was the second time he had been accused of murder. And in this trial for the death of Dante Barksdale, he was acquitted by a jury. He was found not guilty. There was a ghost gun that was used in the murder of Dante Barksdale, which was found in a car in which he was riding. He simply says, I guess it's not his gun. It was somebody else's. There were three other people in the car. Is a person like Mr. Powell, who, as I said, has been found not guilty. But when I talked to Chief Michael Harrison about this a while ago, I said, you know, there's been an acquittal. Does that mean it's over? And he said, well, he's found not guilty. That doesn't necessarily mean he's innocent. Is a person like Mr. Powell considered somebody that you need to stay in touch with, that you need to see what's going on with him? Is it of concern to you whether or not Mr. Powell is working consistently and has stable housing, and if he has children, if he's able to care for them? Is Mr. Powell in danger of retribution if people on the street think that he is, in fact, responsible for killing a beloved figure in that neighborhood? Using him as an example, if you're able to, tell us how the group violence reduction strategy might be implemented in this case.
Tom, I would say that that's a fairly loaded and emotional question, right? What I will say is this: the group violence reduction strategy intentionally seeks to keep people safe, alive, and free, and that work is done by identifying folks who are at acute risk of either being a victim of gun violence or a perpetrator of gun violence. And so regardless of their circumstance, we want to make sure that we're driving down gun violence in our city. And so the work that we do really is about making sure that we're taking the best intelligence that we have to determine who's at the highest risk, and then making the appropriate decisions around how to keep folks safe, alive, and free.
I think that
that's the way that I'll answer that question.
And I mean, it is an emotional question, because it's an emotional issue when all of these people are being killed, and Lord knows you take it emotionally as well you should. Circumstances that you're talking about, the interventions and the monitoring and the connections and the interactions are very, very labor intensive. So how realistic is it to think that the success you've had in the Western District can in fact be duplicated in other places? Safe Streets itself, you've announced, has been changed. There used to be different groups handling the different sites of Safe Streets. Now that's been reduced to just a couple of different groups. We're going to oversee all of the sites. What progress, if any, have you seen with that change in format and structure? I'm asking because people are so impatient, including you and the mayor, about the level of violence not attenuating by any means close to the levels we'd like to see it be reduced. How long is it going to take to get the people in place to do the kind of interacting and monitoring that you're talking about on a citywide basis?
Yeah, sounds like there were a couple of questions in there. So I'll try to address them in the order that you asked them. With regard to my level of confidence about our ability to scale GVRS in ways that are effective, I have a high level of confidence in weekly management conversations. And just for your listeners, Monsi is responsible for the day-to-day project management, program management of this strategy for the mayor. And we closely coordinate with the state's attorney's office and with the Baltimore Police Department. I'm meeting with team members over there every single week, as are my team members, multiple times a week. And so we have done the work with regard to making sure that in addition to those two partners as resources, that we've got the community moral voice buy-in that we need to have in order to make sure that this is going to be successful this time around. We have got the resource allocation that we've requested from the mayor. We've got a commitment from the incoming state's attorney and from other partners that we are not going to allow distractions this time to prevent us from doing the work that needs to be done. What's worth sharing with Baltimore is that not just Baltimore, but all of America has given traditional law enforcement well over 100 years to get this right. And has only given what is a transformational approach 6 months, 12 months to get it right. The foundation that we have poured for GVRS in the Western District, the work that we're doing with the consolidation of Safe Streets and the expansion of the CVI ecosystem is yielding us right now. We're seeing a 30% reduction in the Western District. We are seeing multiple Safe Street sites go more than 365 days without a homicide in their post. I don't know that we've seen that happen across multiple sites before Mayor Scott took office or before I became this agency's director.
Yeah, Cherry Hill, and there's some others. There's no doubt that there have been some successes, that's for sure. And this is unfortunately all the time we have for today. But we will most certainly invite you back, and hopefully next time you're on, we can take some questions from listeners to continue this conversation. As I said, you have a really, really difficult, complex, and complicated job, and I appreciate your thoughtful explanation today. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you, Tom.
Shantae Jackson is the director of the Mayor's Office of Neighborhood Safety and Engagement. And coming up next, we will continue our Midday in the Neighborhood series. Clara Longo de Fritas of our partner, the Baltimore Banner, will join me along with Marianne Campanella as we explore the deep roots of families in Little Italy. But before we go to a break, each week here on the program, it's our practice to read the names of people who have lost their lives to violence in Baltimore City and to list their names on the Midday webpage. We do so to stand in witness to their untimely deaths and to remember their families and friends in their hour of grief. 304 people have lost their lives to violence in our city this year. In 1985, Rosetta Mitchell was 32 years old when she was paralyzed by a gunshot wound. She died last month from complications caused by her injuries, and last week, city medical examiners ruled her death a homicide. Rosetta Mitchell was 69 years old. Baltimore police have identified 3 of the 4 people who were victims of homicide last week. They are Willie Vinson, age 34, Antonio Holmes, age 25, and Travis Curry. He was 43 years old. It's Midday. I'm Tom Hall. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Your Public Radio, 88.1 WYPR.